Linda, well said. Great. So is there a party whip out amongst the Labor Party that you've got to say no, or is there a conscience vote? There's nothing out? Because in the Conservatives, is there a basic whip out saying you've got to go no? Like, how is it there down in the stables in Westminster?
Well, I don't like to speak for the Conservative Party, but in my party there's no whip, but our leader is supporting AV.
Yes, okay, but there's no whip there's on no it. Whip. No, no, you won't get in trouble.
That's usual. I won't worry about that. I'll speak my mind.
Like a true northerner. Don't we like that spirit? And let me ask you, we're going to open it up, and maybe Emma, you could take that, and we're going to open it up to questions from the floor, so get yourselves ready. But let me ask you, each one of you, the same question. Is this just plain bad news for Labor and Conservative? Is it just bad news for them and great news for Lib Dems, BNP, Green Party, etc.?
Well, I think this is great news for democracy, and it's a real shame that what we want here is debate about what's best for democracy, what voting system should be great. And, you know, I'm going to have to agree with Ed Miliband here. He said we can't reduce the second referendum in British history to a verdict on one man. And that's exactly what Linda's just done here. She's tried to make this all about what Nick Clegg or what a particular party wants. But it's not just about one party. It's about every party, and it's about everybody's vote.
The Lib Dems are not running second in a vast number of constituencies. And in the constituencies where they're running third, it would seem quite likely it'll be their votes that will be redistributed. And it'll be a question then of whether they go to Labour or Conservative, no doubt, if those are the two still in at the redistribution point. And there are many seats in which Labour, who get in at the moment, would still get in, but know they had the people behind them, which they don't hear. Or they might go the other way and another party would get in, but know they had the people behind them when they were given this ultimate choice between two parties, which are the last two left in after the others have moved on. But there will also be some seats where the Lib Dems are currently running second, or where they're running third, but another party running fourth would be giving them votes, where they might take a few more seats. But we must not debate this on the likely results. We debate it on the justice of the means. That's why it's a moral issue. If we get the means right, then we can leave the result to the electorate.
Jonathan, is it just straight bad news for the big parties?
It may well be, and that may not be a bad thing. I think one of the things that drives me in this is conversations with my teenage children, who are completely alienated from the current political system, they're very political. They're very engaged with the issues of the world. They're really sort of angry about an awful lot of things. But they are just completely alienated from the political system as is, and actually don't feel that the kinds of views they have, which might be represented by small parties, will ever get a look in. So it might need to be bad news for the big parties.
Oh, sorry. Just remind me of the question, because I thought it was from my speech that you took
it. Is this bad news for you, Linda?
No, I don't think so. I think I know the people in Halifax know who they want as their MP. If they had a second choice, they're not forced to get that second choice. It could be somebody else's second choice, or third choice, or fourth choice. And believe me, it happens. You can get people that have been voted, you voted for fourth, coming up on second, third and fourth preferences and overtaking the winner. That happens in this system. I think people are intelligent enough to vote for who they want as their MP.
This will have to go electronic though, won't it? Because otherwise it's going to take days and days to...
No. At the moment we used to count... I'm a counter. We're used to counting all night. We sometimes have recounts. And manually, doing this manually with several thousand would be perfectly easy. It might take an hour or two longer, but it won't cost more, apart from the paying the counters. It can be done manually. It might be done electronically, but it doesn't have to be.
Can I just add, Australia's never had electronic counter, they've already done manually. This kind of fallacious argument that's been thrown in that we're going to have electronic counting. That's an argument against electronic counting, but no one's proposing that. And it's typical of the No campaign, really. We've heard them throw up the costs of these electronic counting machines. No one's talking about electronic counting machines. It can be done by hand.
So maybe John Snow needs to wait just a couple of hours longer on his little votometer there. So let's throw it open to the floor. And let's either have a comment that you'd like to make, or would you like to throw a question at one of these representatives here tonight? And so who's going to be the first person to start off with a comment that you'd like to make in reference to something that's been said, or a question you'd like to throw at one of the four people that are sitting here at the head table tonight? If you do, just put your hand up. We're going to give you a microphone. Who's going to break the ice? Okay, great. You can just say where you're from, maybe your first name, and whereabouts you're from.
My name is Brian Schofield. I come to this church, and I live in Hebden Bridge.
Yes.
I fail to see the link between alternative voting and proportional representation. No one has established in my mind how you transfer from one to the other. So I don't see that as a threat. Just an odd comment. I used to live in Ontario, and 30 years ago we had electronic counting of votes, and it all seemed to go very well. So that's a minor problem.
That's okay, odd. Great. Okay, we'll take the lady just there. Brilliant.
Just a comment, really. I think that when we've got lots of cuts and people fearful of budgets and jobs and families and breakdown and things like you were talking about, I don't think they're screaming about many progressive things, but it doesn't mean that they don't care about it. And I think once they're through those times, or if those times continue, democracy becomes more important, not less so. I also want to ask the question why it's so complicated for people to understand how the results work. Why is it so difficult?
Yes.
So maybe to the yeses and the noes, that's a question.
Yes, and maybe no one said it's actually going to be difficult, but it has come across from national media. People are a bit stumped by it. Oh, was it? Was that said? Okay. Well, good comment. Anyone want to say something back?
It is extremely easy to follow, and it's very transparent when you see the result of a transferable vote. You find out what everybody's got in their first preferences. You eliminate at the bottom, you see the votes move on, and they accumulate, and you can see each stage of it in the printout, whether it's two stages, three stages, or of course somebody might have 50% in the first place. There are very few MPs around here do, in which case they're on the spot. But it's perfectly simple. And one of the problems the Yes campaigners have is the smoke screens being put up about things being too difficult, or people won't understand them. When the Irish understand them, and the Church of England clergy understand it, everybody ought to be able to understand it.
Hey, we have an opinion. We found it and struck. We've got an opinion here from the front. Okay, that's great. So, okay, let's keep going. A question or a comment? Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Chris Horsman from Barkersland. I think the question of percentage of the vote is a bit of a red herring. It's not since the days of the Rotten Boroughs, when you had 30 voters in a constituency, that any MP has got 100% of the vote. So even if it's 36% or 50%, you're still going to have a large number of people that won't have got voted for the person who becomes their MP. So to use that as a very big argument, saying, you know, 50% of the people will have voted for this person, it will only be by second or even third or even fourth choice. So it's a bit of a red herring.
Okay, does anyone want to make a comment back to that? I think we... Well, let's just...
You're talking too much, so... Happy to talk. Well,
I mean, I suppose the point is that people who are elected are more who people would prefer, aren't they? Because people, they've won the second votes as well. So the point about the 50% thing, I mean, you could say, yeah, it's just 50%, it's just a statistic, that doesn't matter. But the principle behind this is that we're being represented by people who have won more support from the people they're meant to be representing, and I think that's a really good thing.
That's fine if we were running a consensus parliament, which we're not. You know, we're not aiming for consensus where you say, I want to vote for this person, but at a push, I'll accept this person. And if you really, really push me hard, I'll go for this person. You end up with, you know, the consensus view that of your MP, which is not our parliamentary system. So I think to try and push this side is still a bit of a red herring.
Jonathan, you want to say something?
I mean, that's an interesting point there about the nature of our parliamentary democracy, which is Yabu sucks. And, you know, there's nothing more embarrassing. I cannot bear listening to Prime Minister's question time, and I'll do anything to avoid it, because it's not about democracy, it's about point scoring. And that's a very sad reflection on the state of democratic processes, I think. And that's why my children are turned off it. That's why a lot of their friends are turned off it. They're not turned off politics. They're not turned off the issues. They're actually turned off the way it's done. And so actually there's an argument there which says if that's the state of our democratic processes, then the reform needs to go much deeper.
Great. Down at the front there, yes.
Karen Draper, can you help us a bit in the references to the Putney debates and indeed the founding fathers and the states? When did anybody start thinking that it was important to go away from the one man, one vote and the first past the post system as a moral issue?
I don't know that anybody's ever said that. I mean, I think how we participate in our democracies is a moral issue. There's a set of moral issues there. Having a vote, each person having a vote, each person's vote being weighted equally, is an important moral principle, it seems to me, in terms of democracy. But that doesn't mean that I don't see any logical connection between that and first past the post. You know, that different systems will create different kinds of will offer different kinds of opportunities for how voting takes place.
Can we stay with the theory and say that we've got a view of capital on the one side and we've got a view of labour on the other side, and there is a marginal basis of capital winning because of first past the post? If the majority of the minor parties that we're talking about just don't like capitalism, but they want to vote for something else, aren't you then getting an accumulation of blocking votes rather than the majority getting what they want?
I suppose there's that potential.
I mean, I've heard younger people than me arguing, well, why is a vote that's alternative from the fourth pile worth as much as the vote that's been put into the first pile? And I haven't worked that out for myself yet.
It seems to me that
from a moral point of view,
there's a little potential for that, I think, in any voting system like that. But I think it's not right to say that some votes count for more in an alternative vote process, because all votes are counted every time. All votes count equally. There's no sense in which, you know, the fourth preference of somebody counts more than the first preference of somebody else. I mean, that's just not true.
Let's just get a comment from Colin.
What the preferential vote gives you, incidentally, it came in the 19th century, John Stuart Mill and Richard Hare's great-grandfather, if anybody here knew you, Bishop Hare, that's the Hare quota came in, and the Labour Party in its early days, when it was a small minority, were quite addicted to a different form of voting. And Parliament very nearly adopted it during the First World War, and that's when the Church of England took it up just after the war. That's the story. There's a long history, and it's well documented. In answer to the question, aren't some people getting two, three, or four votes? What you have to realise is this is a sequential vote. It's the way in which the parties elect their own leaders. They wouldn't dream of electing their own leader by first past the post with five candidates, but they have it sequentially on different days. You can't do that with the kind of election we got. We do it all on one piece of paper. So the first time round, you vote for a popular party and somebody votes an unpopular one. The second time round, you still vote for your popular party and the one who voted for the unpopular has got a chance now to vote for a different one and help sort it out. But you are yourself having a second vote when they have a second vote. It's just you're staying with the person you voted for first time.
Okay, Linda, would you like to say something?
Yeah. I'm afraid Colin just made it sound very complicated then, and I'm sorry if I gave that impression that I was saying it was complicated earlier. It's not to vote one, two, and three. There's nothing complicated about that. But how those candidates are then eliminated and how to make sure that your votes are used to the maximum effect must be very complicated, because you might not be getting your second choice. It's somebody else's second or third choice that might come up. But I think the argument there was just proved by Colin, because he made it sound to me very complicated.
Great.
I'm convinced by some arguments, I think, from the yes camp. What frustrates me is, I think, one of the arguments which you kind of alluded to was, you know, you're talking about your teenage children, and for them, is AV a potential to get them more engaged in our democracy, which is what you talked about, Linda. You're all for getting people more engaged in democracy. It doesn't seem to me that there's a logical argument that the alternative vote necessarily makes democracy easier for people to engage with. That's what I want to see happen. Actually, the one place we know where it has happened is in Australia, where they've made it compulsory for people to vote. So is that an argument? Should that be an argument that's used for the alternative vote? It strikes me that it shouldn't be. And if not, how do we make our democracy easier for young people to engage with?
Okay. Anyone want to say something?
Well, a lot of young people are involved in the Yes campaign. If you go across the Leeds University, a lot of the campaign has actually been driven by students and young people who, you know, after the Take Back Parliament movement after the last election, they've been part of the people who've been driving this change. So my experience is that a lot of young people are interested in AV, and a lot of the Yes vote is being driven by a new generation who've been brought up and aren't happy with the current political system. But I don't think AV will be a solve all for all democracy's problem. It's a step in the right direction. But there's lots of other things we can do as well to improve democratic participation. One of my things, I think you need to educate children in school about democracy a lot more. I'd rather go down that route of education rather than compulsory voting.
Okay. All right, just for 30 seconds?
Yeah, 30 seconds. Just to answer your question, I was on the march a few weeks ago in London. That's how to get people involved in politics and decision makings. Take away something that they want to keep. That's how you get people involved in politics, or working with them for something they want to achieve. Not a voting system, but things that they're interested in. They'll come out, they'll vote. And that's what I try to do, work with young people in Halifax. Sometimes you just can't get them involved, but we can only do our level best. But the voting system's not going to get them interested.
Okay. Off the record, sir, you've got a brilliant radio voice, if I could say that. The timbre of your voice, rich and deep. If I could just add something festive to the occasion tonight. Yes.
I guess one of my worries about AV is particularly areas in different parts of the countries where there is a particular low turnout and where we have particular activity from the BNP, from the English Democrats. Halifax actually is a very vulnerable place, positioned between Bradford and Burnley. It's interesting to look around the room and see who isn't here. Where is the Asian Muslim community of Halifax tonight? Why are they not here? And I'm worried that in theory, AV looks to be more democratic, but what will the reality be? That we could end up electing some wacky individuals, and what effect that would have on our democratic rule?
Okay. Why, firstly, do you want to make a comment on that comment, or... or is it a different question? If you're making a comment on that, that'd be great.
It was on that. I've got three comments to make. Tim Kirker from Rishworth. On that one, if that thesis is correct, why, I wonder why it is that the BNP are opposed to AV. I think the message is there. And then the guy from Barkisland, I think it was, said that if you'd only go for an AV system if you were looking for consensus government. Yeah? Well, I can't believe anybody would say that. Surely what we do want is consensus government. You know, as if consensus government is a bad thing. Surely what we want is to be ruled by consensus, not by a minority party that imposes its wishes on all of us because it's got a majority in Parliament. Then the third point I was going to make was to do with this business about the fourth vote being outweighing everybody else's, which is a myth. But the fourth vote is only going to be counted in a situation where there are probably at least five or six candidates taking place and the vote is pretty well split. And that no candidate has got, you know, if the guy in the lead to start with has already got 40% of the vote, there's no way that the fourth vote's going to be counted, because unless he only needs to pick up a handful of votes in the second round or the third round, then he's going to win. And the situation where the fourth vote counts that heavily is only going to be the case where the constituency is completely split.
Well, let me first just respond to this gentleman here in terms of the minorities. That it seems pretty obvious tonight that a number of people groups aren't here tonight, and so maybe the whole issue is avoiding what we're trying to create.
I don't think in a meeting this size can determine that anybody is absent for any particular political reason when tens of thousands of people aren't here and only a small number is. I just don't think there's any argument in that at all. The BNP, as I say, get local councillors in because the present system favours them. Lib Dems, Labour, Conservatives split votes, and BNP councillors get in with 27% Stoke-on-Trent, 30%, 32% in other places. The moment you have to get over 50%, and remember, we've talked about 50%, that's the minimum. Much of the transfers may put people into the 60s and 70s. But the moment you have to do that, it does not seem to me the BNP have got a chance of electing a Member of Parliament. If they have, they've got an enormous support in the constituency, and we've got a different problem from them electing. We've got a problem about them being on the ground in that strength. But you will measure their actual strength by who they get into Parliament or don't. Well, at the moment, they're getting in totally unrepresentative persons when 70% or more of the electorate hasn't wanted them. They would be last on their list.
Okay. Does anyone... Yes, Linda?
Just to come in on Hillary's point, and Hillary's worked a lot to stop the BNP rising in North Halifax and the church. They've played a huge part. But I think it comes down to, Hillary, policies, not a voting system, whether the BNP get elected. When they got elected, and it was in North Halifax, it was because they were fed up with Labour policies, fed up with Tory parties. They felt that I and other politicians weren't answering their worries. And it, as I said in my speech, it's down to policies. It's policies that get people involved in voting, not a change in the voting system.
Sorry, can I just come in on that? Because in North Halifax, the BNP only got in by a few votes and beat Labour, and the reason they got in was because there was a direct split between the other parties. It makes it harder for extremist parties to get elected, because extremist parties don't win over 50% of the vote. That's why Nick Griffin is out campaigning for a no vote. The only parties that are campaigning alongside the Conservatives for a no vote are the BNP and the Communist Party. They know, extremists know, that they won't be able to win majority support in an area. If you vote yes to AV, you'll be hurting extremists.
But they got elected in this area, in the European election, on a different voting system.
That's a different... We're not talking about that voting system now. We're talking about AV. I haven't said that. Right. You've assumed that.
We have a real problem here. Because Linda has referred to any further system of electing as the party list system. And the true proportional representation people do not want the party list system of the European elections.
The last Labour government introduced one clumsy system for Scottish and Welsh assemblies, another clumsy system for European elections. It had a referendum in its own bill, which she must have voted for only just over a year ago, which she blamed on the Lib Dems, but in fact Labour put it up first as a vote catcher a year ago, and I'm astonished if she's now forgotten that. And they had a Roy Jenkins commission to look at electoral reform, and when they had that recommendations, they simply shelved it and took no notice. So they have known all along that the present system is unfair, and they've been groping around for what alternative they could use that wasn't quite fair but would look slightly more fair than the present one. And we are offering them now, at least in the single-member constituencies, the fair answer. It's come, yes, from the Tory people, pushed by the Lib Dems, but right now that is the question, and the question gives the people the chance to go for fair voting in the single-member constituency.
Okay. Yes, you can.
I've been quite quiet for a little while, so I, maybe have a moment. We're talking about, what will engage young people. Certainly policies will, and that's absolutely right. In a sense, they're not really bothered, I think, about precisely what kind of system is there. On the other hand, they're very passionate about the idea that their vote should actually count for something. And in our constituency in York, if you don't vote for Labour, your vote doesn't count for anything. It doesn't even really register on the scale. Now, in an AV world, their vote would count more. In some other kinds of electoral reform, it would count even more than that. And so there are opportunities, I think, for them to feel that their vote really does matter in a way that they don't feel it does now. They've been on the demonstrations, too, about all sorts of things, and they do feel engaged by that. But they don't see how it's going to transfer into a voting system. And that worries me a little bit, because it's not about, I'm not a member of a political party, so I don't really care what it does to the political parties in a way. But what I really do care about is what it does to our democracy in the future. I think that's the thing that really concerns me.
Linda has given an apology that she has to go, and so... the only no candidate, a person who's representing, is about to leave. And so while you leave, we'll give you a hand in a second, then we'll have some quick fire questions and quick fire responses in the remaining 5 minutes of this debate before I invite Peter from Oasis to come up for a few minutes. So let's just give Linda a huge round of applause. Thank you. Great. Okay, so down the very back there, lady at the very back.
Thank you. I don't mind anybody else here, but sometimes it's really difficult to cast one vote, never mind put them in order, when you're looking at policies and things like that. And when you're voting for a national government and a local person, it's very difficult. But what concerns me about the AV system, and I disagree with somebody who said that, you've got to get the right procedure, never worry about the outcome. I do worry about the outcome, because the way I'm reading it, under the AV system, you could get people in Parliament making decisions, and yes, eventually, after all the votes have been recounted and recounted, have got over 50%, and driving through policies that actually the majority of the people don't agree with. And so I don't know if I'm explaining myself fully, but it's, they would be saying, well, I've got over 50% of the vote, this is what the majority of the people want, when in actual fact, the majority of the people, that policy was possibly their second, third, or fourth choice. So that's a concern for me.
Okay, so that's just more a comment, so we take that, and thanks for contributing. Two sentences?
Well, Tony Blair was in with 36% of the country behind him and took the view he had absolute power. So, really, nothing can be more absurd than that.
Okay, so, yes, sir.
Yeah, it seems to me that there are kind of lots of flaws in the AV system. And the fact is that you can still end up having a hung parliament with that system. We need to do a lot more work. to enable a system that will enable people to participate properly and more comprehensively rather than any of the systems that we have at the moment.
Okay, we take that. Thank you very much for sharing that. Let's keep going. Let's have some quickfire comments or questions way down the back there. Yes, sir.
Just really a quick one. Everybody's been saying it's wrong to have these smaller parties. Well, why shouldn't the vegetarian party, the BNP party, the you know, all the others have a voice? People actually support them, the Green Party. People agree with the policies. What's wrong for them having a voice? Everybody seems to be knocking these parties. They're there because people care.
Okay, we'll get a comment.
I think that's really important. But I think that's also why I think getting us all to take our democratic responsibilities really seriously and to make the arguments, to actually be out there engaging everybody possible in the debates about these things is so important, because it does, these different kinds of voting systems do open the possibilities for all sorts of things to happen. And while it, basically that's a good thing, it also means that we have to be very careful about what we do and take it very seriously.
Okay, let's have some more. We've got two minutes left. Quickfire comments or questions?
It seems to me that one of the problems that we've got at the moment is that when we have an election, the parties are really only concerned with the few voters in marginal seats who are likely to change their votes. And I just wondered whether AV was going to do anything about that.
Okay.
Because so the rest of the population who are in safe seats, you know, you can vote whatever way you want, and they're not really interested.
In a safe seat area, will it change anything at all? Or will it just be a more moral vote?
A member who currently has 50% might feel fairly safe, but as I say, only one in West Yorkshire has. There's quite a significant number that haven't. But also the real thing is we do not know how the people will vote. We can't foresee the outcome, because not only do we not know people's second preferences, we don't even know their first preferences would be the same, because they're under this pressure to vote tactically at the moment and to ignore smaller parties. And until we actually have it in action, we do not know what the outcome will be, but we do know it'll be what the people want.
Okay, quick fire. Yes.
I'd be interested to know the outcome of your debate, which I missed last night, between you and Anne Cryer. In Keighley, very interesting situation, because the last two people that have been voted as MPs, one Anne Cryer on the left and one Chris Hopkins on the right, have been voted by the people, generally speaking, as the best candidate for Keighley, and a very mixed constituent of Keighley and Ilkley. The hypothesis is that if we'd had AV in Keighley, we would have got neither of the people that we wanted as the best MP for Keighley. We would have got the preferential votes being tribal, whereas the first-past-the-post majority vote was for what the people felt in terms of being the best MP to serve a very mixed community. Now, the statistics may be wrong, but that is the perception, and that is the argument I've heard around me for resisting AV. I go along with the morality, I think, of AV. I'm still like this. But I think there are places where we will not get the majority's view of the best MP in a system which leads to the preferential vote being a tribal vote, with the first-past-the-post vote being the MP that the majority of people in the constituency want.
Okay, we take that, and thank you very much. And down the back there.
Well, just to come back on that, are you trying to suggest that the first-past-the-post system isn't tribal? That's extraordinary. If it's tribal in the second votes, it's tribal in the first votes.
No, I'm trying to bring an example.
And how do you know what the second votes would have been? We don't. Like the bishop said, we don't know what how people are going to handle this until we do it.
I don't know. I do know that in a constituency which is extraordinarily mixed, the majority vote, and it wasn't an overall majority, but the largest vote on first past the post was following the person that the majority of people felt would be the best MP, rather than a.
You mean? So they got more than 50% of the vote.
No.
So the majority didn't. They didn't have the support of the majority then.
Okay. Well, we'll leave that. We'll just have one more comment. Is there anyone else got a comment before I welcome Peter Brearley from Oasis Trust to make a few final comments?